Darren Cole. Going to talk about your own cloud for less than $500. I actually spent less than $500 to build a two-node cloud. I'm going to talk about that. I work for ASEG, Advanced Systems Engineering Group. We're a small consulting company, so happen to just fit in here. With that, I guess I'll get started. So husband, dad, computer programmer. I've been programming for over 20 years. But in addition to programming, I am the sysadmin for our house. I'm the tech support for our house, as I'm sure there are a few of us out there who do the exact same thing. The server breaks because the backup's not working, I fix it. The network quit working, I fix it. I have actually worked on trusted operating systems, if people have any idea what that is. It has permanently bent my view of computer security. I feel for you if you had to deal with MLL systems. So why did I decide to do this? Partly it was because I wanted to see if I could build a useful size cloud for home use for less than $500. I've been working on the cloud for a few years, like a lot of us have, and I also wanted to see kind of the under part of the cloud. More like when you take that architecture class, when you're first learning how to computer program, it's very useful to understand what you're programming to, understand some of the hardware underlying it. So I intended to learn some of that as well by standing up a cloud stack of my own that I could break, I could change stuff, do whatever I wanted, it didn't really matter. It wasn't a production system. And I found that exceedingly useful. There was also a proposal that we have at work to do some a bigger cloud than $500. And it fit well for me to do some work before that got started. So that's another reason. And then once I started thinking about it, I realized that it would be really useful to have some instances that I can stand up and shut down and not have to worry about Amazon or Google, whoever I happen to be using, charging me, that it doesn't really increase my costs, whether I have the instance running or I don't have to worry about it, I don't have to track it, that would be really nice. But mostly, it seems like fun. I may program, but honestly, I do some of the same stuff in my free time as well because I enjoy it. So that was a big part of it. So why CloudStack? As it's been clear from some of the talks here, CloudStack is by far the easiest to install compared to the other underlying orchestration. It's open source. For me, a key was, it, as I said before, it matched up with the work proposal. But it also was not a cloud that I used before. It wasn't Eucalyptus, it wasn't an AWS-based thing, it wasn't OpenStack, it wasn't something I've already looked at. It was something that was going to be new and different, so I could have another perspective on clouds, not just the single instance or the single type that you've been using mostly. So what are the requirements to start with? Of course, cheap. To get it for under $500, you got to keep it cheap. Need 64-bit CPUs with VM support, of course, since that's a requirement for the hypervisor. Decided a minimum of two nodes to get any sort of reasonable kind of cloud running. Running it on one node you can do, but it seemed much more realistic and a better idea of how stuff actually works by having two nodes. I decided to use NFS storage for the primary and secondary storage because it was easy, it wouldn't be hard to set up. I didn't really need high performance. I didn't need to worry about scaling it out. So NFS was pretty simple and straightforward. Decided for a flat single network. I didn't do any of the complicated software-defined networking. That would be future-type stuff. It was just, I need to get started, see what I can do, get a feeling for it, see where my knowledge lacks to learn some new stuff. I was aiming for 3 to 5 instances in my cloud. I definitely reached that without any problems at all. I figured that 16 gigs per compute node would be fine, and I had one compute node, and that's what I started with. And then here's what I built, and what I did not buy. So what is not included in that $500 is a network switch, because I already had a network switch. I already had just upgraded my network, and I had plenty of ports, so there's no need to buy that. As you can see from the case, it can be ugly. I didn't really care. I didn't buy a case. I had plenty of scrap wood. I took inspiration from a lot of the minimalistic crypto mining rigs you can see out there. If you Google for that, you'll see lots and lots of pictures that look very similar. seemed to, it worked for me. It's not like it needs to look in a closet, in the office. It just doesn't matter. So how do I go about doing this? First, I picked the CPU and said, okay, what's the motherboard it matches that works with that CPU? What's the cheapest memory that doesn't have too many DOAs on the reviews? Because that is an issue if you guys have bought hardware directly from Newegg or whoever your preferred purchaser is. Then I found the cheapest power supply. And I said, does that look reasonable? Yes. Does that fit within the budget? Okay, let's start over. Pick the next cheapest CPU. Did that and then just picked whatever hard drives would fit within the budget. As you can see, this is what fall of 2017 is when I bought the hardware. Shipped was $487.32 for a two-node CloudSAC. It's not much money. It makes it really easy to work with. I did eventually get the $30 rebates, but it takes a while. So I brought it down a little bit more, so that's kind of nice. Now, of course, you could probably do this for less. $500 was because that's what I picked. It was easy, not that much money. But if you have hard drives laying around, which most of us do, use them. You can pick refurbished CPUs. Be aware that a lot of times those CPUs don't come with coolers. You gotta source the coolers. Sometimes those CPUs are not really obvious what sockets they are, or sometimes it's obvious what sockets they are, but not what revision the motherboard actually works with them. Some of the sockets have been reused for a different version of the CPU, and if you don't get the right one, it doesn't work. So it takes a bit more research to do a refurbished CPU, and I just didn't spend the time. I got under $500 without doing that, so I did. You can buy refurbished motherboards. They're out there. They're not that hard to find. That server you upgraded and put on a new motherboard, use that. Or maybe the gaming machine that you upgraded, use that. There's no reason not to save money there. So it's really easy to have your old hardware laying around and make use of it. Old CPUs, spare memory. Memory is kind of the driving cost right now for a lot of this. So if you have some memory laying around that has 8 gigs to 16 gigs of memory, go pick a motherboard that works with that and pick a CPU that works with that motherboard. And surprisingly enough, if you look at rack mounts, you can get used rack mounts for, if you look hard enough, $200. That will include memory, oftentimes storage, and CPU. They can be loud, as I'm sure we're all aware, which is not really very good when it's going to be in the office where someone's going to be working. They also require a rack. That said, if you search online for IKEA LAC racks, you'll find that you can make a rack with lumber fairly easily. If you're willing to put up with the sound, that's the real downside of rack mounts. But you can get them plenty cheap enough to do the same thing. So now, more about my install. I started with Ubuntu 16.04, since that was the long-term support that was out at the time. I started with a pretty basic setup. Sudo, of course, set up, basic networking, and OpenSSH. Most of the rest of that was done with Ansible, a set of Ansible roles to configure everything. I did end up doing manual configuration for the networking since I locked myself out several times and got tired of pulling them out from the closet to fix it. So I finally just handed the networking, but the rest of it I did through my Ansible roles. I did one for storage, one for compute, and one for management. I also found it, so I pulled that all together in a playbook to get it all to go at once, so it was a single play. I also automated purging of that so I can get back to a known set, because part of the point of this was to break it, was to say, hey, what happens if I set this setting? Oh, that wasn't a good idea. Instead of trying to go back and clean out the database or undo whatever I did, start over from scratch. So I made an automated purging. Purges it all back out, gets rid of all the database, gets rid of all the packages, leaves the networking in place, and then I can just start over. I can try a different version of CloudStack. I can try a different setup, whatever I want to do. It made much quicker turnaround, made it much easier to test, made it very interesting to be able to try some of those things that might break. I did automate the source installation and building of it. I have not used that for one. That's probably the next thing I'll do when I get around a little bit more time to fool around with it. And I did not automate the actual setup through the web interface. I didn't try to use the API to configure it directly. I did manually do that every time, which is time consuming, but it's not that much compared to everything else. So it wasn't really that big of a problem. So I did have some gotchas that I would like to highlight. Most of these are probably me not reading the documentation, missing a line, or just not being familiar with it enough. Some of you are probably familiar with this and would not have these problems. I missed the argument for the eqcal on loading the system VM template. I don't know how. I went through it several times. Why doesn't this work? Why is the system VM volume saying it's invalid and not loading? Why is it not launching? Finally, I ran it by hand, still didn't work. And then I noticed, hey, wait a second, there's an extra argument. So read all the documentation. Maybe I missed it, maybe it was the version I was looking at. But once I did that, then everything worked much better. The other thing that was a little interesting was the networking. I'm not as familiar with networking. I do enough to get my home network running. I don't do a lot of the VLANs, I don't do all the different slashes. So I had to learn a lot of this as I went. I did not automate the setting of the VLAN tagging for bridges. I did not do really VLAN tagging. It's all on a flat network because my performance doesn't matter. Storage would be nice to have on a separate network. Your performance will obviously be better, but for a home cloud, you probably don't need it unless you're doing something much more intensive than I was. Since my 10/8 network was not used at all on my home network, I just dedicated the whole thing to the cloud. Just leave it at that. The thing that really threw me, though, was gateway is the start of the network, not the gateway of the network. So normally, from my little experience, when I heard gateway, I'm like, oh, you want the gateway to my 10/8. No, when it's asking for that in the interface, at least in the 4.10, it says, it's the start of when it starts allocating IP address, and that's the gateway internally to ClassSec, not the gateway for your hardware network, which, again, probably a little bit more experience with networking would have helped with that. Finally, I put everything in the networking, as you can see there. I think that covers it. Custom template creation. This is another one, because I haven't... This is part of the learning experience. This is part of getting the chance to see how the cloud fits together, to see, how does CloudOnNet work? CloudOnNet grows your partition, since ClassSec isn't the one that does that when you create instances. But it does only grow the last partition. And if the templates you created don't have a last partition that's a file system, say swap, which is the default for Ubuntu and a few other Linux distributions, then it doesn't grow. So I went through that a few times, started and didn't get it. But this is exactly the kind of thing that I was doing. This is exactly the kind of thing that's helpful to learn the cloud, is to see how all this stuff fits together, to see that this user data works or this user data doesn't, or that CloudOnNet didn't grow the file system. That's kind of what I was going for. So what did I actually use it for? A lot of Ansible testing. Turns out that I have some servers that have been running for a while that were long before Ansible was around. And I keep meaning to automate the deployment of DNS and web servers and that stuff that's been sitting on that server for years and just keep upgrading it. With the cloud stack in my house where I don't have to worry about, did I get my 10 minutes to finish this or an hour to finish it? I can just leave it. I don't have to worry about it charging me money because I left it. I didn't finish everything I wanted to do. I only had 10 minutes to work on it instead of the hour I really needed. That was really nice and really useful. It's also really useful to make sure that you catch all the corner cases of Ansible. Because invariably, when I'm going to run this for the first time, if I haven't tested it fully, it's going to be when that server went down and there's pressure to get it back running. This way I could try some of those corner cases, I could try different versions, I could see, I forgot to do this or I forgot to do that. It made it much, much easier. The other thing I found particularly useful was testing different Linux distributions. It's nice not to have to worry about finding the hardware to install the Linux distribution on. It's nice not to have to go and install it somewhere. Vagrant works, VMs work, but it's much nicer to just have something that's off your server, that's off your desktop, that's just out there in your network that you can just deal with. You're like, let's try this one, let's try that one. That turned out to be really, really nice, and I've done that a few times. testing new services. One was Plex. Another one was trying GitLab instead of GitAlight. Another one was trying GitTia. It's just all those different services that you may like to try, or those applications you like to try, having an instance that doesn't charge you is just really nice. I would not have done a Plex server without having tested it before putting it on my server. Granted, my size of my cloud doesn't really do well for transcoding Plex because I bought a really cheap CPU, but it was enough to prove a concept, to say, oh, is this worth putting the effort in to make it really work for my services on my home network for fun? And it was, so I did that. Additionally, until very recently, we've mostly had just tablets and phones in the house, which doesn't quite meet all my software needs. There's occasionally pieces of software that I really need a desktop for, or I really need a Linux box for. I need something more than a phone or a tablet. So I stood up a desktop and can get into the desktop from pretty much phone if I have to, or tablet, or Chromebook, or whatever it may be, and run whatever the software it is that I need to. And that, I just set up a desktop there, and that worked really well. So let's learn from some of the stuff I learned. It turns out that for most of the use cases I tried in my cloud, CPU mattered much more than memory. I have not run myself out of memory yet, even running 7 to 8 instances, maybe even 9 instances at a time. Most of the instances I'm running need a gig or two at most, or even 500 megs is enough, so memory just didn't matter. But several of them were CPU bound, such as Plex and such as some other stuff that I've done. And if I had to do it again, I would pick a CPU with more cores and not as fast. Cores mattered more to me than anything else when I was testing stuff. Storage is at a premium because I do only have 250 gigs of storage, but if you store any of your ISOs or your custom templates out of your cloud somewhere else, it's not that limiting. I haven't really run it out. I just have to kind of pay attention that I don't leave old templates around that I'm not using anymore. But truthfully, most of us have bigger hard drives lying around. I just included the hard drive in my budget, and so therefore I ended up with smaller hard drives. As I said before, more networking knowledge would definitely have helped. I am a developer. I'm not the one that's connecting the networks. I'm not the one configuring Cisco or UniFi or whatever the networking gear you're using is. So it was a really learning experience. I haven't done VLAN tagging, even looked at VLAN tagging until this project, really. That would have been a big help. As I mentioned, saving templates out of your cloud is really helpful. Saving your ISOs out of your cloud is really helpful because when you break something and you want to just reinstall, it's better not to have to re-download those back into your cloud. If you have them outside, just reload them. It's not a really big deal. It's pretty easy. But if you didn't, I spent a lot of time waiting for downloads to finish because I don't have endless bandwidth at home. So how this compare to what it would cost me in AWS, for example? Counting the number of instances, storage, and AMIs that I'm storing, or templates in CloudStack, but pretty much the same thing. It would run me about 80, 90 to 100 bucks a month for the amount of what I've been running in my CloudStack. That means that it only took me 5.5 months to meet back my investment. So yeah, it was worth it because honestly, I'm not willing to spend that much a month to Amazon. I'm just not willing to give them that much. It was very nice, as you've heard me mention several times, not to have to worry about, did someone shut down the instance? Did I create one and then forget about it because I got sidetracked and then I left it running for two? It just didn't matter. That was nice. Doing the custom templates, I didn't have to pay for any extra storage costs. I didn't have to worry about it. I probably would have done fewer of those if I had to do this in AWS. And some testing, such as Plex, just would have been a non-starter. I could not test Plex from AWS. You can't, because I don't have enough upstream bandwidth to stream up some big DVD to see if it'll stream back to my house. It just doesn't work. So I include the URL there. It should be on the website, so you can see and compare to what I did. Final thoughts. I would implement package caching next time I get a chance to do my templating. That'll greatly speed up your installs It's pretty simple to do with, especially with Debian, but it's pretty simple to do in general. As I've mentioned now like three or four times, keep your templates, ISOs, and anything else outside the cloud, because that way you don't have to worry about when you purge it. When you broke it on purpose because you're trying to explore it, have that stuff so it's easier to get started and get going again. It would also be really nice to add a network switch for storage. I have not seen that much of performance yet given what I've been doing, but it's definitely enough that it would have been nice to see a little bit more realistic install, a little bit to see maybe how far I could push some things. But limited time, limited budget. It also would be nice to bring set up some better VLAN tagging. Again, more network experience, more chance to learn some more stuff by breaking it first. Next step would be to try some of the SDN options. There was a good talk earlier today, Nuage, that would be very interesting to try to do. Also, the CLI tool, I had some problems with that. I didn't mention that earlier. In the version of Ubuntu I'm running from outside my cloud to run everything, it won't ignore SSL validation, and I just don't feel like digging in the Python to fix that. I think if I update to a newer version of Ubuntu, that'll probably be fixed. But it still would be nice to have a real SSL cert and to experience a little bit more with Let's Encrypt. There's a talk about that on Tomcat today that looked pretty interesting, but didn't make it. That about covers it. I'm trying to end to make sure we're not here late because we're supposed to be done at 6. So I'm a little fast tonight, but I'm perfectly willing to answer questions. I'll stand out here afterwards and discuss stuff if people want to discuss stuff or have some stuff they want. It's up to them. So is everyone going to go spend $500 and build their own cloud now? All right, thank you very much.